All right, we're back at it. It's episode 41 of the Fantastics Insider Football Podcast. Dan Klaskins and James Adams, we are here to help you get ready for 2022 fantasy football. Heck, we've been here really all offseason long, at least since April, with season two of the Fantastics Insider Podcast. If you're new to it, welcome. We love our new listeners, loyal listeners. We really love you. And if you want to keep up with it, you got to subscribe wherever you listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, to name a few. And of course, you can get it at insiderfootball.com. That's also where you can get our Fantastics Draft Advisor, the tool that will help you win for sure. We're going to talk about it as we roll through our final, can't believe it, our eighth and final divisional preview. It is a look at the NFC West, and my friend James Adams back at here with me. And James, NFC West, I mean, this year, I think we're looking at it, you know, with a team that basically coming off this Super Bowl, you've got the Seahawks, who they might be competing for the first overall pick. So it doesn't seem like that's balanced of a division. But when you look at last year's standings, three teams with over 10 wins, and even the Seahawks went 7-10. So a division that definitely has coming off of a good season, and I think still at least three pretty solid teams in it this year.
Yeah, no doubt. It should be a very interesting division. I mean, I do think the defending champs have a leg up on everybody, and not just because of the defending champs, because they have some turnover, as we'll talk about, but you know, you're going to see a quarterback change. Well, really two quarterback changes between Seattle, who is the forgotten team, and Arizona's got Kyler Murray coming back. But San Francisco has sent Garoppolo not anywhere yet, but has turned to Lance. So while that's a team coming from a conference championship matchup last year, it's hard to say, hey, they're right back there as one of the conference favorites when they're changing to a new signal caller. But I do think with the NFC being down as a whole compared to the AFC, you could still see three teams from this division make the playoffs once again this year. It'll be interesting to see if that does indeed happen. But either way, I think the Rams are definitely the front runners, and not just because they're defending Super Bowl champs, but because they really are the better team.
No doubt about it. And the team everybody's chasing. I mean, if we go over to DraftKings Sportsbook right now and just look at the odds, the Rams plus 125 to win the division. The Niners at plus 160. You got the Cardinals plus 400. Seattle plus 1600. And as I mentioned when we talked about the Seahawks on our pod or on SiriusXM Fantasy this past weekend, James, I definitely think that that plus 1600 isn't even enough. I mean, that's one of the highest odds on. I mean, there's only like four teams that are even in that range or higher. And for me, I don't know. I think they're going to be one of the at least the bottom five teams in football, but Arizona plus 400, one we identified as intriguing because of the value. But the Rams, I just for me, it's like I'm not going to, bets aside, the Rams are a team that I'm going to basically put in there in pencil and just feel good about it as I'm going through and picking my division winners. So we shall see. Lots of question marks. We'll dive into them here today. And even as you mentioned, James, the LA Rams, they have their share of question marks. And namely, some guys they have to replace, and one of their biggest leaders and their biggest guys up front, soon to be potentially Hall of Famer Andrew Whitworth, definitely a guy that was coming off of a heck of a career. And Matthew Stafford, still with a pretty good cast of characters around him, though. We know Odell Beckham Jr. is not back with the team. As we bring you this podcast here on Monday, August the 1st, we've got Van Jefferson seeing a knee specialist. So it's Cooper Kupp. And it's obviously the newcomer, Allen Robinson, that a lot of fantasy owners have been talking about. But with all these things hindering and changing, I mean, Matthew Stafford, the Fantastics Draft Advisor, squarely still puts him in the top 10, James. And I know you agree that, especially if you wait around, this is a QB1 that could be coming at a nice value.
I mean, whether it was Detroit or now LA, Matthew Stafford throws for 4,000-plus yards. He doesn't always give you great touchdown production, but he did last year. And yeah, I definitely think that if you sit after the first couple of quarterbacks are gone and there's no one that intrigues you in that next tier and you wait to be one of the last people to get a starter and it's Stafford, I'm very happy. And I think you have a really solid group of guys there besides Stafford. So I think it's easy once you get to eight quarterbacks off the board, seven quarterbacks off the board, you can kind of pick and choose which one you get. And if it's Stafford, I'm very ecstatic about it. By the way, Andrew Whitworth, I don't think it's a maybe on the Hall of Fame status. I think he is going to get in. I don't know if he's first ballot, but he very well could be.
The Super Bowl ring and the Walter Payton Man of the Year honors he racked up a year ago won't hurt the cause. So, yeah, I mean, we are expecting, to be clear, we are expecting a decrease in production on Stafford. There are obvious reasons to expect that, and I think some might just be overestimating. I think that's what the draft advisor here is saying, is some people are dialing back a little too much with the anticipation of what comes ahead. For me, the lack of a rushing floor is concerning and not what I like to have in my fantasy quarterbacks typically, so he's probably more as a, you know, a fringe top 10 guy for sure. But I will say, James, in terms of his rushing production, I mean, there is nothing there. I know he scored like twice in some fluky sneaks in the playoffs, but 74 regular season games without a rushing touchdown. He averaged less than 3 yards a carry last year in his first season as a Ram. So you're looking at all these other top 10 runners, and there's not a guy that, you know, we're basically projecting for nothing. I mean, literally nothing. 41 yards rushing.
He doesn't run. That's okay.
I know, but... dude, you've got to go. There's not a running back that we rank in the top 30 projected to rush less, is my point. And that's a big concern for me. I mean, he's a nice, steady guy, as evident by his 13 quality starts in his 17 games last year. So if you want the weekly floor, Matthew Stafford's your guy. I think you could get somebody similar, Kirk Cousins, probably 3 rounds later, though. So I don't know. I'm looking for a little more upside, generally speaking, in my teams, but not a bad guy to have, just not a target of mine. Let's talk about those wideouts. Cooper Kupp, make your case right now, James. I'm not saying you necessarily want to do it, but make the case for Cooper Kupp number one overall in a PPR.
I mean, it's just not – last year was insanity. 190 targets, 144 completions. That's a receiver. I'm not talking about a quarterback. That's a receiver. Catches, I should say, not completions. 1,900 yards. Okay, if he drops, I think the thought I made was if he had four less touchdowns and 400 less yards than he did a year before and 40 less catches, he'd still be a first-round talent as far as fantasy football goes. So that's kind of what we're projecting. We're projecting more like 30 less catches, 25 less catches. And that's still an amazing season. He was above and beyond as good as it gets last year. There was a reason he was, you know, Super Bowl MVP, could have been the MVP of, quite frankly, the NFL season. Cooper Kupp was outstanding. And if you're in a PPR league, I expect nothing to change. I mean, he has a clear rapport with Stafford. And, I mean, do you expect Allen Robinson to come in and just steal that volume? We're going to talk about him. We're going to talk about the loss of Beckham, the loss of Robert Woods too, which kind of happened before Beckham got in there. So people kind of think about it as a loss of one player, and it sort of is. But through that all, the one consistent, Cooper Kupp, I don't see that changing. So for me, look, I think there's two other guys in Chase and Jefferson. You can argue with them. In a PPR, Cooper Kupp's as safe as it gets. I mean, you could argue him as the number one player overall.
Yeah, and I don't disagree. And I think there's still plenty of room for Allen Robinson. I mean, even last year, the Rams got an average of 173 receiving yards per game out of other players that were named not Cooper Kupp, basically. 25 TD catches. And as we mentioned, we know some of these guys not in the mix. Odell Beckham, unsigned at this point. Robert Woods, long gone. He was part of that equation. Van Jefferson, dinged up. We'll see the severity of that injury as it develops. Something to certainly keep your eyes on. But I know owners like you, James, that recency bias got burned in a bad way by Allen Robinson. Let's face it. I mean, he was a guy, if you'll remember, back in December on our radio program over on Sirius XM, I said, arguably could be the fantasy bust of the year for 2021 when we did our award. So I get it, but I mean, this is a different player or a different team, a different everything. And I think Allen Robinson is a guy that is being still undervalued, underdrafted in my eyes. You look at the Fantastics draft advisor, definitely a little more, they have the concerns of Allen Robinson that you share. The draft advisor is just looking at the stats, right? He dropped a subpar in a separation from 2.3 to 1.9 last season. The poultry 58 completion percentage rate there was pretty bad. A lot of that could have been on the quarterback play, but I mean, there's no doubt. A-Rob just flat out didn't even give effort in some of the games towards the end. And anybody watching it could see, But, you know, I think he's going to be there. The draft advisor thinks he's more of a seventh round pick, and his ADP is soaring into round four. So it is certainly getting to a point where I don't have as many shares as I was getting in May. But if I get Allen Robinson as my wide receiver three, uh-oh, you better look out, because that team's going to be pretty good, I think. But anyway, let's talk about Tyler Higbee, any of the other players you're taking on in that passing game, even as a dart, maybe late.
I want to see what happens to Jefferson's knee. You know, and I agree with you, but Robinson, as you said, his ADP is soaring. I have him a few spots where he does slide. I'm happy to take him a chance on him, but
what do you think he goes for in our Dream League auction? Or in
boy,
in
that's such a skewed thing. How about if our GSI auction?
Our GSI auction, a redraft auction, $200 budget. How much is Allen Robinson worth to you?
To me, I don't know if I would go more than like 15 to 18. I would bet you he goes for at least 25.
Yeah. And Fantastic says he's about a $10 player. So
I could go 15 because the offense, the upside, like I'm reticent to go there. Kind of I think the same thing that the advisor is telling you is, look, it's been so disappointing. There's been so many letdowns, so many lack of quality starts that at a point it gets alarming. But the upside, no doubt, in that offense is there.
Well, the problem is, in a lot of the cases, when we talk about these underperformers from last year, you don't see the soaring ADP to back it up. So the risk is baked into the ADP. In the case of Robinson, it's not there.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you.
Tyler Higbee, I mean, he's a tight end, too, to look at. I mean, I'm not targeting him. There's plenty of other guys I like better in that range, James. He has had some bit of success. Maybe he's a benefactor of some of these new target looks there, but it's really Akers and Henderson that's left to discuss on this team. Let's get your takes on the Rams runners.
I certainly think Akers is a player that can be a dominant force. The problem is, how healthy is he? He came back last year. Would he have come back right then if it wasn't a Super Bowl run? I mean, certainly if the season was over, he wouldn't have. I want to be more secure in my running backs. But if he falls, and he falls eventually, as we'll talk about with every player, he becomes a value. But I don't want Akers until I've either gone like hero running back, and he's in round five, and that's just not really happening.
No, he's not getting there. Round four is a good spot to get him. I'm a little more risk tolerant. I mean, I realize that coming off this type of injury is not it's an uphill battle. So, but I'd rather have him as an RB2. I would agree to that. I will say that. In some cases where I totally just didn't even go running back, like the Scott Fishbowl, where I got him and Dobbins in like round five and six, those were my first two running backs. And, you know, that was a chance in a tournament with a few thousand people where I was really trying to get some different type of thing there at the beginning. And, you know, if they both turn out to be their old form, maybe it works out for me. If not, then, you know, I probably won't even do much. But I'm with you, dude. Akers not a target, comes with some risks. Fantastic is throwing up all kinds of red flags with the D-plus schedule, the D playoff schedule, the offensive line grade down to a B this year, the official projection, just 880 yards and 7 rushing touchdowns, 4.2 a carry, so that's not terrible, but just 211 carries with 35 catches, 355 yards and a tutty through the air. So, James, if he can return to form, there's no doubt Cam Akers – there is a ceiling here that gets a lot higher than round three.
I would agree with that. And I would say that that's something interesting to mention real quick is depending on what kind of league you're drafting in. Are you drafting in just your 12-team friends league? Or are you drafting in a league where there's a main event with hundreds of teams? Because then taking those chances makes a little bit more sense and gets you more unique. Yeah, but
it's just like building your DFS lineup, right? I mean, yes. Cash play is the way you do a hometown league, cash lineup.
That's a good point. That's a great
versus, you know, basically your tournament lineups, more what you're doing in these main event type entries.
Yeah, so he is a player. Obviously, there's a ton of ceiling. And again, much like I said about Robinson, that's an offense that if you get the right piece that's carrying it as a team, we expect to win games. That makes a lot of sense. I think Akers and Henderson just kind of spell each other too much to allow one to be a bell cow, because it only makes sense for a team that I expect to win that division to ease Akers in.
Well, if it goes the way the Rams really want, you could see like 18 touches a game, 17 touches a game for Akers, and, you know, 7-8 touches a game for Henderson. I mean, yeah. Henderson, let's look at him. I mean, we already know he can't be the bell cow. I mean, he's looked good in parts and he shows some toughness, but mean, a dude gets hurt anytime he has too many carries or too many games in a row. So I think they figured out that. That's why they traded for Sony Michel last season. But Michelle's gone. I think both these guys are going to be fantasy contributors. It's about where people draft them and where they're using them in their lineups. If Cam Akers is your RB1 and Henderson's your RB3 flex play, I think you're going to be left underwhelmed.
I think that's a wonderful way to put it. Yeah, they're going to feed off each other a little bit too much. And Henderson is a bye week flex play at best for me.
Yeah, I'll take him in some best ball, especially where he's going. I think there's a chance Akers really struggles, and Henderson turns out to be a double-digit league winner in some cases. So it's going to be interesting to watch. I don't know how much we'll see of it until the season actually begins, but it will be something to keep our eyes on. Let's move along, James. We got three more to get to. The Niners up next, and the big news there, second-year man Trey Lance officially named the starter. Jimmy G's days in San Fran appear to be all but over. And what's your thoughts on this offense now and a second year of Lance after getting a little bit of a taste as a rookie?
I mean, I think where you see Lance being drafted right now, people are expecting him to be a very productive fantasy asset. I think people are expecting Patrick Mahomes 2.0. I think the Niners drafted him to kind of be Patrick Mahomes 2.0 too. But I've got to see a little bit more consistency and accuracy in the preseason. Right now, I'm just left with a lot of questions because I just don't know. And I don't want to just go, okay, it's all in. It's just like what we saw before. I mean, right when Mahomes took over for Smith, that team had been a good playoff team, just like these Niners are. So Lance steps into a great situation, great weapons that we're going to talk about, especially in the passing game. Can he do enough with his arm? Can he be accurate enough? I don't know that I know that answer yet. This is an offense that I'm really still – I don't have a lot of shares of guys in this offense because I'm very reluctant to buy all in when I'm hearing things in you know, early camp about, you know, Lance not looking great.
I like we already talked about it, right? My quarterbacks, when we're talking about Stafford, I went a little upside here, right? And Trey Lance is Mr. Upside at QB. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. For me – I like watching it. I like watching his highlight films. I definitely think that he's got something special about him and the way he carries himself. There's a poise about him that I like. And that software even talks about his poise, his explosiveness as a runner. He has all the traits. Is he ready? I argue that Kyle Shanahan is the perfect coach for him. I mean, if Trey Lance mm-hmm. would have been drafted in some scenario, James, where he ends up with an Adam Gase type or some Jason Garrett offensive coordinator or something like that, it may have never worked out, but at least you put him in somebody who's creative enough to use him the way he should be used. So I like the pieces around him. What I'm interested in is to see if he does develop and take that step forward, as defenses have to guard him, how do they possibly guard Debo? And if they're guarding them both, how big a holes are these Niners running backs going to have to go through? And if Kittle can stay healthy, I mean, that's pretty – I get the allure of what Kyle Shanahan saw with the potential of Trey Lance's ceiling. For me, he's still a QB2, though, but one that has a chance to put up some big numbers just off that rushing floor alone. Debo Samuel, let's talk about him. Got paid. We can put that behind us. He's in San Fran. He's happy. He's rich. How high up on your board is he? And, I mean, is this a guy, James, that, I mean, you feel comfortable with as your wide receiver one? And really, you know, to where you think that, hey, that's a league-winning type move.
I am feeling much more comfortable now that he's been signed. I just don't like when there's off-the-field stuff going on, but it's part of the game. It's a business. I'm much more comfortable with him being signed now. He fits into that wide receiver two range for me. He's not in the top tier. He's not going to go after Diggs or Adams. He'll go after those two for me. But once you get into the next group, the Tyreek Hills and such, I think he fits right there. And if Lance is unable to connect deep down the field, Debo would be the clear extension on dump off passes that they were already utilizing him for. So yeah, I think this Debo is a player I'm starting to come around on now that he's signed. And I think if Lance is successful, I think the first player he connects with is Debo.
Yeah. Debo is going to get involved. We know as a runner, as a receiver, he's no doubt a top five receiver in any format, I think. He's still just 26 years old. And if you'll remember, James, the draft advisor, this was one of the big players that it was pushing up the board last year. It's probably one of the reasons I had the exposure I did, because it sort of sold me on it. But this year, it is anticipating a decrease in production, but still a very bullish projection. We're projecting him as a 2.03 fantasy value. He's got a mid-second round value, so a slight tick of value there if you get him in the mid-rounds where he's going of round two right now. And only 62 catches. So in PPR leagues, that's something to consider. But when you're projecting the rushing numbers that we are, which is 292 rushing yards, that is definitely going to make up the difference. You know he's going to get some rushing touchdowns to go with those seven receiving touchdowns we're projecting. So I like Debo. I can't get as excited about any of the other pieces, including Ayuk, who I just don't – we've seen some flashes, but is he a guy you can trust in your lineup? Are you there yet on him?
No, but if you draft him, you don't have to trust him in your lineup. So if he falls late enough, I'll take a chance in case Lance gets to be the explosive offensive catalyst that, you know, certainly San Fran hopes he will. But I'm not taking him unless he's like my wide receiver five, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, Fantastics definitely is saying this guy's about a round and a half overdrafted right now. We got him more as a back-end wide receiver four. He did get five quality starts in his final eight games, but you'll see a playing system here with Lance James, even less passing, I think. Fewer attempts, that's the thought here, at least in our building. Tight end George Kittle, it's all about injuries, baby. If he can stay healthy, you know what he can do. Health has been a concern, James, and I don't know. For me, Kittle falls deep enough, and I'm starting to get him in some of these best balls without even targeting him, which isn't necessarily my thing. But, I mean, he's still got to be right up there after Andrews and Kelsey in that next tier, whether it's Pitts, Waller in front of him or not. He's still a tick ahead of those other guys.
In best ball, I love Kittle. He can take over a game. I love Kittle on my NFL team more than I love him in my redraft set your lineup team, though, because you're obligated to play him if you draft him in fantasy. And there are games where, quite frankly, it's George Kittle doesn't mind blocking. He's okay being a tight end all the way around, not just a receiving tight end. That's great for him. That's great for the Niners. That's not great for your fantasy lineup,
though. And it's
not great
for his durability concerns either.
It's true, too, and it's not great for his durability. So George Kittle's a guy that I would love to have in best ball. I only want him in my regular season leagues if he comes off the board, you know, later in rounds. Doesn't have to, he can still be tight end three, but it's got to be late in the draft, and that's just not going to happen enough for me because, as I said, I mean, you just can't bench him, but sometimes he puts up a lot of benchable numbers.
Yeah, the good numbers you can't ignore. 75% reception rate, 12.8 yards per reception. If he gets 80 to 85, 90 targets, if he stays healthy, those numbers are crazy sick, and you throw in the 50% red zone success rate. It's all about health. It's all about health, James. There's no doubt about it. And I expect Andrews and Kelsey maybe to each take a little tick back from what we saw a year ago. So Kittle isn't the only big guy falling down a little bit, I think, in the production category, by the way.
Yeah, but I mean, that may well be true.
Take us through this backfield. Elijah Mitchell took it by storm last year as probably one of the biggest surprises of the fantasy season. Easily could have been considered in the fantasy rookie of the year conversation. He was a nominee in our award show last year when we ended our show. But is he a guy you want to feel good about as your RB2 this season, James?
No. Here's the problem. I mean, where he's being drafted is probably about accurate. San Francisco, and maybe this is just me reading too much into something, they haven't had the same leading rusher since Carlos Hyde. That's going back a ways. There just seems to be a constant revolving door in San Francisco's backfield. Mitchell looked unbelievable last year. Six quality starts out of his 11 starts. I mean, he played 11 games and almost got to 1,000 yards, scored six touchdowns. I'd be happy to get a repeat performance with a little bit more health from him, but I continue to look back at, okay, why did they go draft another running back? Why wasn't he the first running back they drafted last year? Maybe that second question is less relevant, but why are they going and drafting another running back? Is Jeff Wilson all of a sudden going to be a leading rusher on this team, which he was, what, 2 years ago? I mean, he's back in the mix. There's just, I have a feeling that they're willing to just hand the ball off to whomever. So no, I'm out on Elijah Mitchell minus one league where I already had him in Dynasty.
Good stuff on that. For me, I'll give you a verbal retweet. I mean, Mitchell is certainly going to have some games where he's viable. I'm interested to see how the all of it unfolds. But let's move along here, and let's go to another team on the list, and the Arizona Cardinals, another team with some more questions, James. And I think for the biggest thing we're looking at from a fantasy perspective is how to navigate through this DeAndre Hopkins 6-game suspension. Not only how to treat Hopkins, but really all the other pieces in the offense. It impacts Kyler Murray's value, obviously the value of the other receivers, including newcomer Hollywood Marquise Brown. D-Hop, a guy that even if he wasn't suspended, James, I mean, he is getting a little bit older. Is he the D-Hop of even a year or two ago when he does return? Another question to answer. And let's start there. Let's just start with Hopkins. And does the guy have enough juice in the tank?
Probably. I think so. Does the body have enough? Like, you know, mentally, I think he's all in. I don't expect him to be taking routes off like one Allen Robinson we already mentioned earlier. I expect everything from him in that regard, but he's 30 years old. He's a physical receiver. Body takes a beating. I don't think he is the football player he was just a couple of years ago. You ask me, can he repeat what he did last year? If he does repeat what he did last year, I don't really want him on my team.
Yeah. I mean, it's just hard. I think if you have some receivers, a few receivers with late bye weeks, he's a nice guy to stash because he could end up having a big second half. But I don't have a lot of him because I still think he's getting drafted a little too early for my liking as of right now. But, you know, Christian Kirk's gone. Chase Edmonds gone. They combined for 120 receptions last year. They're both signed with other teams. We talk about this suspension. I mean, dude, they brought in Marquise Brown, but who else is going to get the ball? I mean, Zach Ertz, he had a pretty nice little debut there after that October trade as he averaged 5.1 catches, 52 yards in the final 11 games for the Cardinals, only 3 touchdowns. He's 31. Can we really expect him to do that again?
Yeah, I can. Tight ends just, you know, they age differently. Their aging process is different. They get good slower, and they stay good a little bit longer, a little bit older, because they're not blazing speed.
Plus, Ertz isn't doing the things George Kittle and Rob Gronkowski were doing.
That's a fact,
violently.
That's a fact, too. So, yeah, as a matter of fact, I think Ertz, I mean, he's the one player on this offense I have more shares of than any, because I believe that once Hopkins comes back, Ertz still probably maintains most of his target share, but I think he could benefit a little bit extra early. So, yeah, Ertz is the one player on this offense I do believe in, and I do think that with Hopkins, without Hopkins, I think he can repeat what he's done there, what he did last year.
Trey McBride is capable of going in line. He's better after the catch. I mean, we know we don't like rookie tight ends in redraft, but does he get involved enough in this offense to ding Ertz's value a bit?
I mean, probably. I hope he doesn't wear a similar number and it's not the old 86-88 game that I used to play with Goddard and Ertz back in Philadelphia, where one of them would score a touchdown. You'd go, yeah. But I don't know that he's going to have enough to really bother you with Ertz's production. I do think he'll be involved, though. I mean, he was the first tight end off the board, and I think he has a wonderful upside in Dynasty. And I think we'll see, much like you did see back in Philadelphia with Ertz and Goddard, I think you'll see them both on the field at the same time.
Hollywood Brown, we saw what he's capable of with big plays. And I mean, I can remember Oklahoma with him and Kyler together and those big passing plays through the air. So it's not hard for me to think back too far. He caught 91 passes for 1,008 yards last year. Do you think he can hit those levels again, given this suspension and what we're seeing?
Yeah, I think he can get close to that. 6 touchdowns isn't exactly breaking, you know, lighting the world on fire. And I do think that he's in an offense that's going to throw the ball a little bit more. And I think, I mean, look, Kyler and Lamar are pretty similar quarterbacks in style. So I do think if he can be successful in one place, another place looks at him, says, hey, we see there's already a camaraderie between you and our quarterback. We see that you fit our system. Yeah, I would think he would fit right in and be able to replicate what he did last year pretty easily.
His ADP is all over the board, depending on your source. We like him as a late 4th-round pick inside the Fantastics Draft Advisor, where the official projection for Brown is 85 receptions, 1,020 yards, 6 touchdowns. Kyler Murray, James, obviously another guy, a little bit of off-season, off-the-field drama with contracts and stuff, but he got paid. And interestingly enough, the clause in his contract getting a lot of buzz because he's required to watch 4 hours a week of film it's not often you see quarterbacks with that in their contract. I'm not sure Peyton Manning or Drew Brees or Tom Brady all had that in their contract. And I know some people are saying that's a racial thing, and maybe it is. But at the end of the day, is Kyler Murray a guy that you think is the franchise quarterback? Is he worth this big money? I'm not even talking from a fantasy perspective. Is Kyler Murray a guy you think that can, you know, lead you to Super Bowl contending seasons year after year?
I don't know. I mean, he definitely led his team to a playoff appearance last year. I don't know. There's a lot of guys out there that don't have that it. That it is something, I mean, let's face it, the Bengals are a franchise that were looking for a quarterback with that it for a long time. And they had a lot of quarterbacks that didn't have that. I don't know if Kyler Murray's got that. I'm not sure that I've seen it yet, but he might.
Yeah, I like him. I mean, I know he gets he's too short, he's too this, he's too that, but I'm not as sold on Cliff Kingsbury in his system in the NFL. I think each season teams are starting to figure more and more of it out. But I don't know. From a fantasy perspective, the rushing upside alone of Kyler Murray is appealing. And when he's in there with Hopkins last year, you saw these epic numbers. But 2 years in a row, James, I've had Kyler Murray in some very important fantasy squads with nice, hefty investments, only to see his durability become a concern because of that same style of play that makes him this high upside guy. So I'm backing off of Kyler Murray and having too much of him on my fantasy team, even though I'm projecting him like Fantastics as a top five quarterback here in fantasy for 2022.
Yeah, and that's where I've got him. I've got him in that tier after, you know, the big group of three go off the board. But once you get to that tier, like, I'm going to let you pick between Hurts, Murray, Jackson, Burrow. I'll let you pick, and then I'll take what's Burrow. Left over. So
Burrow. You'll never get Burrow if you keep letting me pick like that, dude.
Well, but you get my idea. That's why I will take – this is one of those groups of players where, I mean, I'd probably rather have Lamar than Kyler Murray. I like them both similar. I'd rather have probably Kyler than Jalen Hurts, but I'll take whichever's left over if you want me to pick between those three.
The draft advisor views him as a round four quarterback, early round four like Burrow, and these guys are going in the fifth and sixth round in most drafts, so there's value to be had, and that's to your point. I'd rather not go in the first few rounds. I'll wait to take number five or six quarterback off the board, and if you get that few rounds of value, I'm loading up on RBs and wideouts.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. So I'll take what's left over there.
But I'd rather have that tier than be picking between, you know, Russ Wilson and Kirk Cousins and Derek Carr and, you know, wait until everybody's got a quarterback. Because then you got to get the right guy in the lineups, James. It works mm-hmm. in best ball. It's harder in season long.
That's true. Amen. And that's why they're tiered. That's why that's the end of that tier, that second tier.
James Conner, a guy that definitely has some durability concerns, but with Edmonds gone, I know he scored all the touchdowns, and he is touchdown dependent. He has a pretty pedestrian yards per carry. Anybody under 4 yards per carry, he's not somebody I'm generally excited about. But if he holds up, if he stays healthy, James, the opportunity is still going to be there for him to be a high-end RB2 easily, in my opinion. The question is can, like so many others, can he hold up? Right now, Fantastics is projecting him as a mid-second round pick. He's going mid-round three and even into round four in some drafts. So one of the better top 15, 20 running backs in terms of values, according to the draft advisor. So I'm leaning that way myself. I'm not necessarily trying to get him in round two, but no, by no measure. But I've been taking him in late round three and even in round four in some spots and feeling pretty good about it.
He catches the ball too. So, you know, you say, oh, pedestrian yards per carry, but he's obviously, he can pass block too. That's what keeps him on the field to be able to catch the ball. So he stays on the field. That is what you need to see. Now, does he stay on the field from game to game, much like he will from play to play? That's what you're talking about. That's the durability issue. But if he's your RB2, I don't think there's anything wrong with it because he's clearly the guy there, right? Edmonds is gone. And I mean, regardless of who you think's behind him, I think it's probably Darrell Williams was pretty good last year. It's still somebody behind him, and it's not Chase Edmonds, who he was splitting time with last year.
I think Williams could see how the rest of the goal line. What I'm concerned about is Williams eats into those goal line carries a little bit.
And I do like Williams. I think he's, I mean, look, Williams had like a wonderful year last year, so he's going to be involved too. But I do think that he doesn't do anything more than Edmonds did last year to diminish Connor's value.
No, and they signed Williams at a league minimum too. So if it doesn't really work out,
Bye-bye. See you later.
That's what you can generally read between the lines on that type of stuff. All right, let's wrap it up with the Seattle Seahawks. Certainly last on the podcast here and probably last in the division again this year, as evident by their plus 1,600 odds to win the NFC West, according to DraftKings Sportsbook. And the post-Russell Wilson era begins. And honestly, it looks like a team that's trying to get his replacement, long-term one at least, at the top of next year's draft with the way they're approaching this offseason. But it's weird because they're in this sort of semi-rebuild road. It feels like our beloved Cincinnati Reds here, James. It's like they're getting rid of some things like, oh, yeah, let's get rid of Russell Wilson, this big thing. But then you're keeping other assets like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett around. It's like, okay, you don't. I mean, I'd be shopping these guys for whatever you could get at this point and just can go in complete tank mode. And but no, they've got Pete Carroll back for his 76th season of NFL coaching. And I don't know, James. This team's really hard for me to get excited about. Let's start with the quarterback. I think Geno Smith's the starter day one. We know they both stink. You're not really even in Superflex talking about these guys too much. But
no,
it's really about what Geno Smith or Drew Lock mean to DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Noah Fant, and any of the other respectable players in this lineup.
I bet Drew Lock starts, not because I think he's good.
I think we should. I've sensed like a six pack of choice or something.
I'm good with that. I just think it's because he's unknown.
To look forward to in the Seahawks training camp.
I am in on that for sure. I'll take Drew Lock. We'll do a six pack of our choosing.
Injuries not count. If either dude gets hurt, all bets off.
That's fair too. That's fair. They both have to be dressed in week one. Well, that's not true. We won't say that. No injuries. We'll just leave it at that. Yeah. But regardless, I think it's terrible to the receivers. Locke's probably more likely to sling it, but he's gonna throw interceptions. That could be better for the receivers in the long run because of lots of garbage time, but it's not gonna mean great production. I still tell you what I said, I think yesterday is it makes sense to me. The Packers need a receiver, trade Seattle, Jordan Love for one of these two receivers and let them see if that's the answer instead of these two quarterbacks that clearly aren't the answer. That's just besides the point. But at this point, Lockett and Metcalf are neither players I'm going after. Lockett maybe a little bit in best ball as a wide receiver four because we know he has that big upside. And I'm expecting with Locke's big arm, maybe they connect for two big plays and it pays off good from every couple of weeks. But Metcalf is, you know, we saw him get frustrated last year. And we know he has that bad foot, which is supposed to be healthy right now. He did get paid, but I can't rely on him. Like last year, we were talking about Metcalf as like a top five wide receiver in Dynasty. And that's because we assumed Russ Wilson was tied to the hip with him. Russ hurt that finger in, seven.
It just was abysmal.
And it's been horrible ever since. And Metcalf did not respond. He had he had no connection with Geno Smith, minus one play. They went for like 80 yards. I mean, boy, if it's Geno Smith and we're still drafting, DK Metcalf's going down my board.
Here's the thing. In Dynasty, if you're sitting on Metcalf, you just got to ride it out and hope that the quarterback situation or they trade him. Right? Because this is a guy that a heck of a lot of NFL teams like to have. There's no doubt that at 24, DK Metcalf still has a bright NFL future. He just needs a quarterback or a new team to get there.
Yep, I totally agree. And it'll be interesting to see if one, you know, because Garoppolo's still out there, San Francisco, who we just talked about, doesn't want to. Yeah, but why
would Seattle want to trade for Jimmy G? They want to draft their next guy next year. Like, they want to lose. I'm telling you, like, I get they need the quarterback. Everybody's understanding that, but it's like, why? I mean, to me, Jimmy G, they're probably better off waiting until the first big quarterback's lost for the season.
Honestly. You may be right there. And my thought is, but is the next big quarterback in next year's draft?
Well, it's a much more loaded of a class than this year.
Year's class was terrible, right? Anybody
you talk to will tell you that. And I don't know, just our guy John Lobb, and the last time we had him on, he was really talking up this next class being something special at the position. So I'm taking his word for it.
Fair enough.
Let's get into, all right, so we're both off Metcalf. I mean, both of these guys everybody's off of them. That's the problem. So at some point, you're going to have to draft them. And if DK Metcalf is suddenly a mid-range wide receiver three in your draft, go ahead, take the chance.
I agree.
Because the talent's there. For Lockett, it's a little bit deeper. We've got him more as like the 40th receiver on the board. Fantastics projects Lockett as a late seventh round pick. He's going an early seventh round on the blended ADP, taking in all the various ADP sources that the Fantastics draft advisor offers. But DK Metcalf, he's going in early round four, and he's more of a late fifth round pick. So big fat bust is what that's sounding like there. Noah Fant, I mean, I like the talent, but clearly Denver didn't like it enough to not to just throw him in on this deal. They could have made this trade without him, James. I mean,
yeah,
he's a fringe top 20 tight end, and that's about all we need to say.
Agree. Yep, that's fair. I agree.
Let's finish it up with the running backs. Rashad Penny, Kenneth Walker. I like what I saw in Walker, Michigan State. I like what I saw down in the second half of the season with Penny. And a lot of that even came with the out Russell Wilson under center. So they want to run the football, James. There isn't maybe a chance both these guys actually end up as top 30 running backs by the time the dust settles, if that's all they really want to do.
They both stay healthy. That's very possible. I don't know if they have the O-line to really support that. But we know Chris Carson has retired, so it is those two in my estimation. I'll be interested to see how Walker looks in pass protection, because he looked really good Michigan State last year, and I do think that he emerges as the back to own out of this backfield at the end of the year. But I guess I'm just kind of bitten by Penny, who I guess he was healthy in playing 10 games last year. That's healthy for him, right?
Pretty much. I mean, you look at their ADP. I mean, it's very similar. I mean, Penny's going the blended ADP inside Fantistics has Kenneth Walker 605, Penny 701. Fantistics says Penny is 604 is his value and 608 on Kenneth Walker. So, I mean, it's splitting hairs here. They're both back end RB3s. You don't want both of them on your team. You take one of them and hope you win.
Yeah. And I guess I think Penny has shown to be an electric player. But it's just
I know, but Penny's actually done it in NFL games, even if it's been limited.
He has. You're absolutely right. That's there. Penny has this upside that I definitely can get behind. But then just I'm so bitten by injury guys that not me personally, like I've got some, but I'm just to the point where I don't like getting invested in injury guys.
Let's just leave it at this. Stay away from all the Seattle Seahawks.
You can get by that. You can get with that.
Let's finish it up with a few props. First of all, officially on the record, James, it sounds like based off our previous discussion, Arizona plus 400 is the way you would go on the division winners. I like the Rams still plus the 125. I know the odds aren't there, but I think they're a pretty decisive favorite for me.
If I'm throwing down, I think if you run this.
If we're laying down real dough.
Which I do. I'd pick Arizona because I like the 4-1.
Yeah, fair enough. In terms of some team props, let's talk about let's go to some players. We did a lot of the team props and over and unders on the SiriusXM program. So let's save this for a few players. I'll throw some names out at you, a few from the division, and let's start with Kyler Murray, James. Kyler Murray market's currently at DraftKings Sportsbook. Touchdown passes, 25.5, minus 112, either way you play it.
I would think over.
Over the 20, I mean, he has to stay healthy, right? He has to stay healthy. For me, I hate that number. Fantastic Draft Advisor is projecting officially 26 passing touchdowns. so that doesn't help there. 4,050.5 passing yards. The under's minus 118. The over's minus 106. We are projecting there 4,355 yards. So, and the odds are in our favor slightly. So I'll go with the Draft Advisor. And if I had to make a Kyler Murray bet on these two selections, it would be that over on the 4,050.5 passing yards.
I would go under or stay away from both for the simple fact that you said it. And it's so true when you're talking about player props. Team props, not everyone has to stay healthy. Player props, he has to play every game. If he misses one game, that 300 yards we project over the total for yardage all of a sudden gets dicey.
Yeah, you're right.
That's just one game.
Let's look at James Conner. Last year, James, we talked about all the touchdowns he scored. All the touchdowns. We know he's not going to put up those type of numbers again. I mean, the guy went into the end zone 18 times, I think it was.
Yeah, something crazy. It wasn't quite the Eckler number, but it was close.
This year, the over-under is 9.5 rushing touchdowns. And the under has got a slight tick to it at minus 120 over minus 105.
Again, I would stay away, but I would be more inclined to take the under because James Conner misses games, too.
Yes.
And I just expect touchdown regression, but I don't like minus 120.
Fantistics has 8 rushing touchdowns. So Interesting one there. Let's go on to a different team and look at some of these Rams, and let's go right to the guy that tore it up last year in Cooper Kupp. And 11 and a half touchdowns, 1,325 and a half receiving yards. Pretty much even money on the yardage totals. Either way you go, it's minus 124 in the under 11 and a half receiving touchdowns.
I go over on the receiving touchdowns, picking between both of them. If you're giving me,
yeah, we've got 12 receiving touchdowns, so a slight tick to that over, but plus 100, 1,558 yards. We are well ahead of him in passing. So receiving yards there. So I always like the over yards more than touchdowns, because touchdowns are so unpredictable. But as you said, in a lot of these cases, that's just a game or two. 300 yards padding with the receivers, a little bit more than 300 yards padding with the quarterback.
Amen. Amen.
Any other player you want me to pull up a prop on, James? Just interesting one in the league here.
Yeah, I can't believe you didn't start with Allen Robinson.
Yes.
I was all over the 1250 last year over.
Allen Robinson. We'll wrap it up there. 850 and a half receiving yards, 6.5 receiving touchdowns. The under on the
touch
yards,
any of these.
The under is minus 124 in the yards. The over is minus 118 on the touchdowns. So, you know, I like Allen Robinson, so I'm inclined to go over 850 myself.
I don't want to touch any of this. If I did anything, I'd go under those touchdowns just because.
Fantastics has got 820 and 6. I'm a little higher on him than the draft advisor, and the draft advisor's still right on his number. So that speaks for me, based off of what I like about Allen Robinson. I would go over probably on both of these.
I just wanted to bring him up because he was my worst preseason bet last year.
We will have an entire episode dedicated to this. And now that we're done with all of these season previews of our divisions, we're going to roll right in the rest of August, getting you ready for drafts. I'm out on the next episode. Skeeter Robinson will be in with James. They're going to look at draft advisor versus ADP. Still ahead in the month, we'll take a dive into third down indicators. We're going to go through our two-man mock draft, our Fantastics draft plan, our deep sleepers, one for each team in the NFL. And of course, our season-long and prop future bets, all before we get to that weekly waiver wire show. But you want to go over to insiderfootball.com, get all the tools you need to win, including the Fantastics Draft Advisor. Go grab a free trial. Check it out for yourself. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen and get it anytime, insiderfootball.com. James, final takes on this NFC West.
It'll be interesting to see how this division plays out. We're not going to get to see as many games as we did last year because the Bengals will be playing in primetime in that 4 o'clock window this year, baby.
I know. It will be fun. It's going to be a great season ahead. We hope you stick around with us. Until next time, for James Adams, I'm Dan Klaskins. Thanks for listening to another edition of the Fantastics Insider Football Podcast.